Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Matt Kimmel and Colin Harper to go through this week's Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining news. Certainly a lot of things happening this week, so stick around. Before we get into the show, we wanted to thank Forman Mining and CleanSpark for being lead sponsors of this show. You'll hear more from both sponsors a little bit later in today's episode. Okay, before we get into that, we are only about 20 days away, maybe 15 days away at this point, from the Bitcoin halving party here in Denver, Colorado at the Independence Institute. That'll be from 2 to 8 p.m. on April 20th. The Bitcoin halving will be that morning, so we'll be enjoying beers, brews, and so much more at the Independence Institute. So be sure to join. You can find a link in today's show notes. Also, we'd like to point you towards The Big Empty. It's our newest production from Blockspace Media. It's a full-length film documentary about Helios Bitcoin mine that Galaxy Digital runs down in Spur, Texas. So go check that out. You can find a link in today's show notes or watch it on our YouTube channel, Blockspace Media. Okay, a few words from our sponsors, and then we will jump right into the conversation. Hey, listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Forman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Forman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Forman, you get a system that scales with your business: inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Forman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Forman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit Forman.mn. With Forman, you're not just managing a mining operation, you're setting a new standard in the industry.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
I'm Mike Novogratz. I'm the founder and CEO of Galaxy Digital. You can think of us as the Goldman Sachs of crypto.
The economy has changed in the last 30 years. The cotton production in cultivated land has decreased. We have a few agriculture-related jobs.
When I first heard that Bitcoin was coming to town, I thought to myself, that's the job I'm going to have. I'm going to work there.
It's good to see that we have some jobs for people to have, you know.
I think most of the people in the rural areas were skeptical, and many still are skeptical of Bitcoin mining and cryptocurrency in general.
We don't like people around here messing with our cattle. We don't like them messing with our money either.
The Bitcoin, I don't understand. If it's going to help the small people, the community, be able to pay our taxes.
Most of it has to do with a discussion about a currency that is not tangible.
You've always got those family members that talk about it. Oh, it's just fake money. Well, so is the dollar bill.
If it positively impacts this community, if it employs people, I'm all for it.
I think for the broad population, our newest company neighbor, Galaxy Digital, the litmus test for them is going to be the pool.
You know, mining is a really important part of the ecosystem, right? Without miners, the blockchain doesn't exist.
I mean, I think it's good because in a small community, we've got to have modern things come in. That brings interest to our community, and we need that. It's what keeps us alive.
It also can be a really lucrative business. It's in the ERCOT region of Texas, where there had been huge infrastructure invested previously, which allows a perfect setup for Bitcoin mining.
Okay, welcome back to the Mining Pod. You were just listening to Blockspace Media's newest documentary, The Big Empty. That was the trailer for it. We just put it out yesterday, Thursday morning. Definitely go check it out. You can find the link in today's show notes. It's a Bitcoin story about the Galaxy Digital Helios Bitcoin mine down outside Lubbock, Texas, 800 megawatt Bitcoin mine. We went down there with the Galaxy team in September and made a 27-minute film about it. So go and check that out. Welcome back to the Mining Pod. We have another news roundup for you. As always, Matt Kimmel. And today, We have a special guest, Colin Harper of Luxor Tech. Welcome, gents, to the show.
Thanks, Will. Happy to be here.
Thanks for having me.
I don't feel like I should like welcome Matt anymore, but I do want to be gracious. So I did.
Got to be a gracious.
Welcome. It makes me feel good.
Good. Well, I'm here for that. Okay. We have a lot of stories on the docket. First, Taiwan and the earthquake there, how that affects chip production. And then we'll move over to talk about Bitcoin ordinals, Franklin Templeton, what this means for the mempool, and then finish up with Poolin selling some of its assets in Texas. Matt, I'll boot it over to you for the first story. Let me pull it up so everyone can take a look if they are just watching on YouTube or CoinDesk TV. But here we go. Okay, hand it to you.
Yeah, so a 7.4 scaled earthquake hit Taiwan. You could see on the screen there, it caused some pretty major damage as a major size earthquake. I think an average California one is around 4 on the Richter scale. But yeah, it paused TSMC's operations there. But Will, fear not. Your ChatGPT subscription is probably not going up, because I think about 80%, I think the article says about 80% of operations are back online. So hopefully it won't cause a lot of damage to the semiconductor space. What do you think?
Definitely. I'll read this. It's from Bloomberg, bnnbloomberg.ca. So it's like the Canadian version of Bloomberg if you want to get around the paywall. I probably shouldn't say that because that's not supporting journalists, which is not good. But anyways, I'm going to read from the piece. TSMC said overall tool recovery of fabs has reached more than 80% as of Thursday, and there has been no damage to its most critical chip making equipment, including extreme ultraviolet lithography systems. However, certain production lines require more time to return to normal due to greater impact from the quake, it added. So certainly a lot of repercussions were something like this. I think for Bitcoin miners, the first thought was like these T21 or S21 series miners coming off production lines. Tons of future orders for these units. Like, just name a public company, Bitcoin miner right now, they probably have a future order for S21s. And these chips are coming from TSMC. So the question is there going to be delays for issuing these units because of this quake? Colin, any thoughts on that?
I mean, doesn't really look like there would be too many problems, right? I mean, I'm looking at this Fortune article. TSMC shrugs off Taiwan's biggest earthquake in 25 years. You know, the lead says its employees returned to work only hours after aftershocks rippled through the island. I mean, certainly there's going to be some disruptions here, and I'm sure that customers at the bottom of TSMC's chain, kind of like the Bitcoin miners, because they don't command the most ordering capacity, might be affected somewhat. But this is not going to be some crazy supply shock for Bitcoin miners, especially when you consider like a lot of the chips that are currently being manufactured, or the chips that are being included in T21s and S21s that are currently being manufactured, are kind of already in Bitmain's custody. And they're already in their warehouses. So if we did see any kind of ripples from this, I think it would be in the latter half of the year with some later futures orders. Another reason to go with MicroBT, though, is MicroBT uses Samsung chips, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, so only the threat of North Korean nuclear invasion as opposed to earthquake. Diversify your chip suppliers, folks. I saw a few tweets about this being like, oh, where should TSMC move? Like, maybe to the Western United States where there's not a lot of natural disasters, forest fires, maybe out here in Colorado, we have a lot of that. But
you
I think
anything compared to the West Coast, it's like, yeah, child's play.
True.
Colorado would be good. Not a lot of water, though.
I do think like there could be some delays around this. So something to watch, probably nothing as significant as the first headline would make you think about. Matt, any final thoughts before we jump to the next story?
No, I honestly think the same as Colin. I think if we were to see an impact from this, it'd be months down the line, because ASIC manufacturers have to put in their orders a significant amount of time ahead, and then it actually gets shipped to them, and they actually have to build the ASICs, and then they have to get sent out to miners. And so I don't think in general it's going to have a major effect, because like the article says, 80% is already back online, and the resilience of the Taiwanese showed that only hours after the earthquakes, they're back in the in the manufacturing. So I think it'll be fine.
In the competitive world of Bitcoin mining, one name stands out: CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner. At CleanSpark, efficiency isn't just a goal, it's our standard. Our sophisticated facilities are built and led by expert teams who care about Bitcoin and the communities we work in. Scale? We've mastered it. Our large-scale operations have set us apart in the industry as examples of community-oriented building. Our track record speaks for itself. We navigate the complexities of the new economy with precision and with skill, continuously achieving operational milestones. Curious about how we do it? We invite you to discover the story behind CleanSpark's success at cleanspark.com.
No days off in the chip mines. Okay, we got to do our Ordinals corner here, even though Charlie is at NFT NYC. Where's it? NYC NFT? I don't know. I don't know if I actually care, but he's there repping Blockspace. So shout out to Charlie. Still do our Ordinals corner. We have a piece from Franklin Templeton. They put out like this little investment note and they post on Twitter. It's been circulating around Ordinals groups, titled "The Rise of Bitcoin Ordinals," quote, April 2024. In the past year, Bitcoin innovation and development has seen a renaissance in activity. Positive momentum and innovation is primarily driven through Bitcoin NFTs, or non-fungible tokens known as Ordinals. New fungible token standards such as BRC20 and Runes, Bitcoin Layer 2s, and other Bitcoin DeFi primitives. And then we'll jump down to the last bit here where they talk about how a lot of these ordinal collections and just the general NFT volume share is starting to move past like Ethereum and Solana. I think it's already past Solana at this point, but Ethereum definitely in its sights and it's eating into its volumes month over month. Now, like, why does this matter? Zoom out. If there's like a native microeconomy, if you will, on top of Bitcoin, that means all of Bitcoin's participants get to benefit from that, whether that be miners with transaction fees or vendors who have more options to pay in Bitcoin because people are making new exchanges. So I think this is definitely something to watch, even though it's definitely adjacent to mining. Colin, Matt, any thoughts on
that? The top is in.
The top is in already.
For Ordinals, if Franklin Templeton is tweeting or writing about it.
Colin has successfully called 500 of the last 500 tops.
Yeah, I mean, jokes aside, though, it's interesting to see something as, kind of as silly as Ordinals and Inscriptions. I know there are a lot of people listening to this who probably like them. I understand the appeal to an extent. But the fact that these are being covered by, you know, a major fund like Franklin Templeton, is kind of, to me, indicative of just kind of how powerful some of these narratives have become. And also, you know, they have a vested interest, they have the ETF, so they want to be covering the space more frequently. But, you know, you just never would have seen something like this 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. But, you know, now we're in kind of a different era for Bitcoin, right? Where I think even the silliest of things are much more palatable to a mainstream audience. The other thing I would just kind of comment here about Bitcoin DeFi or layer two stuff like that, I think that going forward, one of the challenges the industry is going to have, especially with mainstream audiences, is really contextualizing what that means, because it doesn't really exist currently. It only exists in the form of a few side chains like Sovereign or Rootstock and their Bitcoin DeFi arm Sovereign. And currently all of the hype about DeFi on Bitcoin or layer twos is just kind of that. We don't have anything that's currently operating. And I think a lot of people are anticipating that Ordinals and Inscriptions are going to kind of be the springboard to get all of these other users from Solana and ETH onto Bitcoin. But I think the challenge is going to be, do they actually have something to come to? Like, is there actually a platform for them to use? Because none of that stuff will ever be on Bitcoin's main layer. It's also kind of represents some challenges for, you know, I think discussions and trends about MEV on Bitcoin. You know, until we actually have some sort of clear DeFi applications that have some sort of ramification for how the base layer functions, I don't think you'll see, you know, pure play MEV like you've seen on Ethereum. But that's kind of my high level take with that. Interesting to see from Franklin Templeton.
Great segue to talk about Bitcoin Season 2, the newest podcast from Blockspace Media. with co-host Charlie Spears. So go check that one out. You can find a link to today's show notes. I'm just a salesman at this point. I'm not even like a Bitcoin podcaster. I'm just a salesman. Okay, Matt, what were you saying?
I was, to Colin's point, I'll just say when covenants, you know, I feel like,
yeah,
but I feel that we could literally do an entire podcast on the things that he was just touching on. So I'm going to get back to the article and actually say that I have a few qualms with this. Because they say, quote, for years, Bitcoin developers sought to create a form of NFT on the Bitcoin blockchain. However, they were never very successful. One, I don't really think Bitcoin developers have been focusing on NFTs. But two, have we forgot the rare Pepe phenomenon? I mean, it's not like Inscriptions created the NFT on Bitcoin. I'll actually wager that, because I remember there being a major auction for rare Pepes, like millions of dollars for a single rare Pepe, that the highest sale of an inscription has not yet reached the highest sale of a rare Pepe. I will let the fan...
In Bitcoin terms?
I'll say in dollar terms. Yeah.
And I think in Bitcoin terms too, because to Matt's point, like when rare Pepes were being auctioned off last cycle during, I mean, like Bitcoin was comparable, right? And it was between 30 and 60K. And you had some early, and for listeners who don't know what rare Pepes are, they were like the first NFT collection really on Bitcoin through Counterparty. Which was I can't believe we talk about this stuff all day, like try to convince my in-laws that I have a real job. They were the first NFT standards on Bitcoin. They were kind of a trading card collection in the form of Pepe the Frog, different, you know, variations. There's like a Satoshi Nakamoto one or Dorian Nakamoto. And there are all of these other ones. And you know, to Matt's point, like that's like those were the first NFTs ever. And people often forget about that. And I think that it's an interesting question you raise, Matt, because it's like, what is it about inscriptions and ordinals specifically that are gaining so much traction, I guess, and why they're, you know, why they have been the thing that, you know, these traders and degens from other chains have latched onto. I think it's probably just a timing thing. Right. Ed Will showing his Bitcoin puppet. That's another thing. The inscriptions meta is wild. It's like the ugliest collections. Like the ugliest collections are the ones that end up being the most popular.
But this is not dissimilar to the high valuations in the NFT market last cycle on other chains. Like the best art is not necessarily the most valued.
You're saying a drooling ape with a cigarette is not high value in your eyes?
No. My statement on the record is that I am defending the rare Pepe community, and I feel like that should not be a lost part of history. That's what I want.
I think that's a good point. That's worth bringing up.
It's a good segue to talk about Lisa. I think it is. You don't like my segue?
No, it's okay.
You can't call out the host like that. That's tough. Bad podcast etiquette. Anyways, talk about this tweet from Nifty Nay. I'm gonna go with Nye. I feel like it makes more sense. She is a Bitcoin developer, and I believe she also runs a few different like Bitcoin technical conferences, like Bitcoin +++, right, Matt? She's great to follow.
Lightning developer from Blockstream.
Oh, okay.
Or was at Blockstream.
Fantastic. I think she's at Base 58 now, but don't quote me on that. But she has this tweet, which I think we should go over. And she says, quote, honestly, devs working on shitcoin protocols are definitely pretty far down the morally compromised path. But I get far, far, far more upset about Bitcoiners working on minor centralization tech. She goes on in the rest of this tweet thread to talk about essentially acceleration services for Bitcoin pools and how there's been so much pool centralization around Antpool and Foundry and these other pools, like pointing to Antpool on the back end, whether that be like a Binance or a BTC or another pool. And they're basically all controlling what can go into the mempool, what's included into a block. And so she sees that as a net negative. I think this feeds into the ordinal stuff because we are seeing inscriptions, or these inscription collections start to work with pools directly. The most glaring, obvious example of this is Marathon with its Slipstream service, which just went out of beta yesterday. So you're able to go and submit a non-standard transaction to them directly for them to include their next block. You just have to pay them and then give them your hex or your transaction. So we are certainly seeing a world where pools have more power now because we have a little more diversification in terms of what kind of assets can be used on top of Bitcoin, whether that be like a JPEG or a non-standard transaction versus in the past just being like a standard Bitcoin transaction. Matt, I really want to get your thoughts on this one. Collins as well, but Matt, throw to you first.
I actually empathize with this take, right? Because we tout Bitcoin as this trustless financial system where you can make peer-to-peer payments without intermediaries. But it's not often talked about very much that there is kind of an intermediary here that is Bitcoin miners. The incentives have just worked out as such in the system of this, the design of the system in history, to where this has never been an issue, right? And more specifically, I guess when I say miners, like these days, I'm talking about mining pools, like post 2011 Bitcoin, right? Mining pools have grown really huge because they help smooth out the revenues of miners. They don't have to deal with the variance of actually winning blocks. They help coordinate block production, so on and so forth, right? And there has always been, if you look at kind of the history of block production post-mining pool era, a cohort of pools that sort of have very large percentages of blocks that are actually settled. Think Ghash.io, think BTC Guild, think even like the Ant pool. You know what I mean? You can look it up. You can see the charts. And I think what Nifty is getting at here is that if those incentives break down, that it actually is a potential issue. The reason that mining centralization and that the mining pools kind of having a large share of block production has not really been an issue is because there really isn't a moat to build necessarily around mining pool business historically, at least from what I've observed. The bargaining power has sort of always been on the side of miners, right? Pretty trivial to switch between. And you could start up as a mining pool and it's not like you're left in the dust. If there was private order flow, private transaction flow, that could really be a comparative advantage and differentiate some mining pools, then I think it would feel, or at least it would look like more heavily skewed towards those participants. It would feel more oligarchic, and those incentives could potentially be broken down. So that was a long-winded answer for you, Will. But I think that kind of distills the essence of what she's saying. And I think we all, like, if you are a Bitcoiner that kind of loves the original ethos and kind of spirit of the ecosystem and think of it as peer-to-peer electronic cash, then you want mining to be as decentralized as possible.
Need ASIC help? Check out Bitamine, one of Bitmain's certified repair shops located in Washington State with satellite offices in Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas. PSUs, hashboards, immersion setups, in and out of warranty repair, Bitamine has you covered. Want to train your technicians? Bring Bitamine to your site for hands-on training in the art of ASIC repair, complete with Bitmain AMTC certification. Contact Bitamine today at dan@vmasic.com. Again, that's dan@vmasic.com. When you think of ASIC repair, think Bitamine. When Stratum V2, right, Colin? That's what you're going to say.
Stratum V2 is a LARP.
Didn't they just put out something recently for Stratum V2? Like with, I don't think we really covered it, but
Did I put out something or did?
I believe the Stratum V2 team put out either like a new version of it or like almost a fully functioning version. We didn't cover it on the podcast for whatever reason. I feel like Stratum V2 is just one of those topics where it's almost like it's always there or almost always there. So I have not covered it very much.
It's like a lot of things, I think, with Bitcoin tech. It's like most people don't understand it, and it's kind of just hyped as this skeleton key that will unlock decentralization, when really it's only as good as the mining pools who implement it, right? So like for listeners, Stratum V2 is basically a way for individual miners to construct their own block templates. So you're a mining pool, you've got 1,000 miners, you know, the blocks that you're mining as a mining pool, the actual miners in your pool are finding those blocks, right? But you build the templates for them because it's just easier for everyone. So in a world where Stratum V2 is implemented, if you're a miner and you care enough, you can build your own template. And when you win the block for the mining pool, your template is the one that ends up getting chosen. And so you can order whatever transactions you want. You're in charge of what goes into the block that you actually mine. And the two things, like the miners actually have to care enough. And quite frankly, I think that if you break it down on like a hash rate basis, the percentage of hash rate that would actually implement something like Stratum V2 and care about it is like pretty tiny. You know, like I would venture to say probably like 1%, if even that. The other thing too, though, is that the mining pool actually has to honor it, right? So like a mining pool can say, hey, like we're Stratum V2 enabled. And then if you build the block and you get it mined, and the pool just says, don't worry, you know what? We're not going to actually do that. Because kind of to what Matt was talking about, we have an accelerator where we are using, you know, something like Slipstream or a similar service to include transactions that we would rather prioritize because we can make more money from those. You actually have to have the mining pool care about it and implement it. This is where I think, you know, things like an ocean pool, like mining pool, really would be a benefit if it ends up actually gaining enough traction on the network, right? I mean, like you really do want competitors like that who offer kind of this business model where they say, you know, we're going to let miners choose what they want to put into the block. And you want that in the face of miner centralization. Now, I think that does get complicated, though, when, you know, say what you want about ordinals or inscriptions. You know, you can play semantic games and call them spam and say it's a bug like the Ocean Pool staff does. But, you know, Nifty was saying that she really appreciates what Ocean Pool is doing. And I do to a point, but like they're also censoring transactions. So it's like kind of like both sides. It's like that Spider-Man meme, like they're pointing at each other. And like one is saying it's like, you know, you're using accelerators that are like pricing out other transactions, or you're, you know, pricing out other transactions with spam. The other side is like censoring legitimate Bitcoin transactions that you might not like them, but like they conform to the current consensus rules. So, I mean, honestly, right now, I don't really see any, like on either side of the aisle, I don't really see any very compelling solutions for mining centralization. And this gets even more complicated when you dig into like how pools actually operate and the things that they'll do for liquidating hash rate between themselves, right? Like this is something that Chinese pools have done for a long time. Like you look at like Via BTC and BTC.com and Antpool, which were like all owned by Bitmain at one point, and they were all basically just subsidiaries of the same company. You know, you start peeling back some of those layers and it gets dicey. So I agree with a lot of what Matt said there. I'm not firmly convinced that transaction accelerators are really the thing that we need to be worried about. You know, I think that the more worrying thing is just like how much hash rate is actually concentrated under one pool, and what happens when an entity like the US government says, hey, by the way, don't mine these transactions. Then that's actually an argument for when you might want transaction accelerators at other pools that are offshore, because then you can basically, you know, throw in transactions that otherwise would get censored from a giant pool that is beholden to a regulator like the US government, or regulators at the US government or other countries. So.
Well said.
Can I make a quick shout out?
Do it.
Parker Merritt recently did a post looking at
a friend of the show, if there ever was one,
looking at flows and basically showing how some mining pools are working together. If you're interested in this conversation, definitely check it out. It's a great piece.
Big shout out to Parker. He and the Coinmetrics team put out great research.
A friend of the show. Okay, let's go to this pool-in topic. Our friends over at the Miner Mag put out this piece this morning. So Thursday morning, we're recording Thursday afternoon. Pool-in founder sells Texas Bitcoin mining sites for $49 $1,000. Colin, I'm going to toss this one over to you to intro the whole subject.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, Poulin used to be one of the largest mining pools. You know, they were top five on any given day. And then in September of 2022, they ran into liquidity issues and suspended withdrawals. And now they only account for, I think, like 1% or less of global network hash rate. Poulin, like many other mining pools, specifically Chinese mining pools, they had a lot of business. They have a lot of actual physical mines around the world, and they migrated to the US after the China ban. And, you know, this just kind of looks to me, I don't really have much else to say other than it looks like they're cashing in their chips and maybe trying to just, you know, wind down things as much as possible. Matt, you might have some more to comment here, though.
I share the same sentiment. I think Mr. Kevin Pan here, who's the sole shareholder of what's being sold for $49 million. I feel like that's kind of the story here. Cashing out, maybe retire. I don't know. Good luck to Mr. Pan. That's my take. Will, what do you think?
I have a different take than all you guys. I'm actually going to take it the complete opposite way. So Poulin's a really interesting company in that it had, it's well known within the Bitcoin mining space. You know, it's been around for a long time. They have this pool business. They started diversifying. They issued some interesting notes. And you see that in the MinerMag article back in 2021. They started doing like hash rate tokens and things like that. They're trying to like fuel expansion. And then they got caught up in the China mining ban. So like geopolitical problems caused like financial hardships. They ended up having to wind down the pool. Colleen just went through all that with these IOU tokens, and that's still not resolved. But they've somehow like stayed afloat. And somehow they did, the way they did that, from my understanding, is by operating West Texas. They got a lot of these like Ant Hydro boxes on the ground and started hashing with them. And then I think since like this last bear market, they've basically been focused on like building infrastructure. And now I think they might be at the point where, you know, the price of infrastructure has been bid up because we're going into bull market, and they might be able to flip that and then like fix their books, or at least like partially fix their books, right? It looks like with this New York Stock Exchange listed company, and I don't know the name of it, some Chinese. No, is it? So it's in the article. There's some agricultural company that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange that is going to buy this facility from Poulin. Does that mean that there's going to be something in the future for Poulin and going public? And like, that's sort of the question, right? Like, where you've seen a lot of different ways for people to go public. And once you do get public, going to a bull market, you can have a lot more liquidity. So I wouldn't count Poulin out yet. I don't think that they're trying to spin things down. I think like selling assets into a rising market isn't always the best idea. I think it's better to wait a little bit longer, but I'm sure like the value of that asset went up. And if they are able to do some sort of merger or some sort of JV with a publicly listed company, they have all the world to gain. So I'm not saying I'm bullish on Poulin, but I'm certainly not bearish. I don't think they're spinning anything down yet. I think there's more to the story that we still need to see. So that's
But if they do end up going public, and couldn't you see that as like, again, going back to the cashing in the chips, it's kind of like plundering, right? The public markets. It's like, you basically cash in on the hype of Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin, and then you basically sell out, like you sell while you can, right? Also, the site was sold for like $490,000 per megawatt, which is like pretty good.
It's really good.
I wonder how much they paid for that site. I'd be curious. But I think you're right about, you know, this is probably a pretty opportune movement for them, right? To go ahead and just go ahead and flip that.
I mean, without more documentation, and it is a private company, we're not going to really be able to like look at the P&L for an asset like this if they're going to move ahead and sell it. But there's certainly some people listening to this show who do know those numbers. So feel free to reach out in DMs and, you know, give us a few more insights. Okay, let's finish the show today. Bro. You have an idea?
I have an idea. If they want to spin back up more revenue, why not a transaction accelerator? Bug Nifty Day a little bit.
What about an NFT collection? How about that?
No, okay. they need a software proposal to do that.
True. True. I wanted to show this little video as we close out. This is one of the more fun ones I've seen in a little bit. Shout out to Wilson Mining. They put up this video of putting Bitcoin miners into a sauna they purchased to see what would happen. And like, surprise, surprise, the sauna got hot. But they did it basically to test like how an S21 runs versus an M60. So let's take a quick look at this.
We're going to do part two of the M60 versus S21 real world testing. I got sauna in my house. We're going to stick these miners in that sauna and see what they can do when they get hot. So we are at 72 degrees, 73 degrees in there. And upon startup, the S21s consume a lot. I don't know why. It's at 18 watts right now, or 18 amps. I'm going to shut it down. So there it is. There's your proof. The M60 performs significantly better than the S21 in hot temperatures. S21 could not reach its stated operating temperature. It could not reach its stated efficiency at that level, which was, I think, 19.5 at 45 C. Not even close. It was at 23, so not even beating an XP at that point. I mean, dude, that's pretty self-explanatory.
Okay, so the whole video is like 14 minutes long, so we're gonna watch that, but I think it's pretty innovative test. Put an S21 and an M60 in a sauna and see what you get out of it. So shout out to Wilson Mining for that video. As we close out, any final thoughts from you guys?
With regards to that video, that is an interesting, like you said, it's a really kind of neat and creative way to stress test that. But it reflects kind of some stuff that we did at Luxor or Hash Rate Index. We reviewed an S21 and subjected it to like 40 or 45 degrees Celsius ambient operating temperature. And above 40, I mean, so the good news is the S21 could actually operate at 45, whereas prior models would just shut down entirely. But at that temperature, you definitely see hash rate drop and the efficiency worsens when it gets super, super hot on one of those things. So just kind of corroborating those findings.
All my thoughts are now that I just want to go sauna. So let's wrap up the show.
Okay, thank you. This show is brought to you by Blockspace Media. Go check out our website, blockspace.media. You can find other shows like The Gwirt Show and Bitcoin Season 2, along with our newsletter and our new film, The Big Empty, which you can find a link in today's show notes. Thanks for listening to the podcast. The show is brought to you by Damien Somerset and Nick Gates. See you guys next week.